Point number two, hearts, then minds. Just the facts, ma'am. From the time we first enter kindergarten as impressionable five-year-olds, we're raised to believe that facts and details are the most important things to learn. We're taught to memorize lists of spelling words, flashcards with multiplication tables, and the capitals of states and countries. And to measure how well we're doing in school, we're repeatedly tested to see just how much information we've retained. So it should come as no surprise that when we communicate with others, we're quick to pepper our speech with facts and figures. And when we try to convince people of our point of view, we often bombard them with information that supports our argument. When we fill our speech with volumes of information, we're mainly confusing or boring our audience. While most non-savvy marketers think it's the other way around, most people make decisions based on their feelings, and then they justify those decisions with the facts. Let's say you're standing in the checkout line at the grocery store. You've stacked your food on the conveyor belt, and you've already flipped through the Inquirer and the Star. Setting the magazines back, what product do you notice the grocery store conveniently stacked on the aisle on either side of you? Of course, piles and piles of impulse items, mostly candies and sweets. As you reach for the Snickers bar that's calling your name, the facts tell you the candy is loaded with calories and fat. But it sure will taste good, won't it? And it's so easy to give in to temptation and toss the candy bar onto the checkout counter with all the other things you're buying. Point number two, hearts, then minds, will show you how to tailor your communications to make sure that you capture your listener's interest with a powerful emotional appeal before you try to capture their intellect with information. The world's most beautiful woman. You would think that one of the most important matters consumers consider when making a purchase is price. After all, we all like to save money and we're all wary of being ripped off. And so you'd think that we'd be more likely to choose the least expensive of similar products if we had the choice. But there are at least three industries where the likelihood to purchase is directly related to the product being more expensive than its competitors. In those cases, cost actually adds value to the product. Corporate consulting is one, diamond jewelry is another, perfume is a third. Just as a CEO of a large Fortune 500 company would be unlikely to hire a consulting firm that only charged $7.50 an hour for its professional advice, few men are willing to ask the woman of their dreams to marry them with an inexpensive diamond. Because most of us have no idea what a diamond should cost, and because we certainly can't put a value on the love that the stone represents, the diamond industry has stepped in to tell us how much we should pay. Who decided that the right price to pay for a rock is 2 months' salary? What if your salary is much bigger than mine? Does that mean that your love deserves a bigger diamond than mine? And if I got lucky and found a flawless 2-carat diamond at a garage sale for $9, would it be wrong to present it to my fiancé? How many men would dare bring home a Valentine's gift of perfume for their wives and announce, "You'll love it, honey. It smells really swell. And here's the best part. The entire 55-gallon drum only set me back $12." Without even knowing it, the fragrance industry was one of the first to embrace the entire brain darts concept and use it to sell their wares. That's because they inherently understood the concept of selling their products by appealing to their audience's feelings instead of by appealing to their customers' intellect. After all, few product decisions are more emotionally based than the $160 billion a year in international cosmetics and fragrance sales. According to The Economist magazine, quote, "Americans spend more each year on beauty than they do on education. Such spending is not mere vanity. Being pretty, or just not ugly, confers enormous genetic and social advantages. Attractive people, both men and women, are judged to be more intelligent and better in bed. They earn more, and they are more likely to marry." End quote. L'Oreal knew what it was talking about when it said, "Because I'm worth it." Think back to almost any perfume advertising you can remember. Now that you're aware of point number one, all about them, you've probably already realized that the fragrance manufacturers don't usually mention what's in the bottles of the scents they sell. Instead, they go on and on about what their fragrance can do for you. Wear Charlie or Tommy, and you'll feel young. Splash on Jovan Musk or Versace, and all of a sudden you're daring and sexy. A dash of Biblos or Gucci will make you feel sophisticated. Douse yourself in Cartier or Chanel No. 5, and you must be very elegant indeed. With all the photos of beautiful people frolicking together in Cannes, South Beach, and New York, not one of the perfumeries ever mentions the ingredients in their bottles. And with good reason. Besides the fact that we care more about what a bottle of perfume will do for us than what's in it, the plain truth is that what is in many perfume bottles is not all that sophisticated, elegant, or even palatable. Do you know what's actually in a bottle of perfume? Along with the source of the various fragrances in perfume, rose petals, let's say, or citrus peel, perhaps, and besides the coloring and alcohol that fill most of the bottle, there's something else that makes perfume, perfume.